We're just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah, absolutely, because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Oh Really Radio, show 127, recorded Friday, September 23rd, 2016, where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversations that make you go, oh really. I'm your host, Andy Cowan, with my usual suspects. I've got Daniel Atherton and Stephen Griffith here tonight. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Once again, it's good to be here.
We're going to try and only do one show. Only one this week. So we're going to try and condense things, but we do tend to tangent and go off the rails rather readily, if you've been
I'm not in my racing shorts.
What does that mean?
I can't run a race, a one-show race in jeans. Give me a break, man.
Oh, come on.
You didn't inform me of this stuff beforehand.
Oh, you can do this. You can do this. And besides, this is podcasting. Why are you even wearing pants?
Because I'm at my friend's house and not my own.
Oh, well, okay, fine. No, you didn't know that? I mean, podcasting. You only get the headshot here. I mean, it's pantless.
Oh, well, no, they're... Trust me, I know that secret.
Okay, all right. Very good, very good. So, as far as audience feedback, we didn't get any from the last shows, but, well, actually, there was an audio note on one of the shows, and I'll have to work on that. In fact, I'm doing quite a bit of audio notes, because I'm hating life right now. Skype is... driving me batty, and Hangouts is essentially become a non-viable product for what I'm doing. So I have ordered a surveillance DVR and some adapters from VGA to RCA, and then RCA to BNC, so that I can then output the video from several different computers. I think I have some lying about. From each individual caller into that, and then I'm going to capture all of that with a HDMI capture device here. And that way, that's how I'm going to get your heads into here and the audio into the board. Because I'm going to break them out individually, so everyone will be calling separately. It'll be an interesting several experiments for how that works. So, but they're on the slow boat from China, so I'm not sure exactly when they're going to get in from Shenzhen. So, and of course, we have Podcat. Sprocket is already trying to get all the love that he possibly can from me, and he's like, why are you holding me weird? Just let me up on your shoulder. Come on. Okay.
Hug me and love me like you know I like.
Exactly. Paint me like one of your French girls. Okay, so if you find mistakes or any critiques for us, suggestions, go ahead and send us an email. Oh, really? RadioPodcast@gmail.com or phone it in 470-222-6759. Okay, so directly into potpourri. And you know what? We've been doing potpourri a lot lately because there's things that are just simply not good ideas, not bad ideas, not law, not science related, not history related. There are just things out there that we need to discuss and get off our chest and things like that. So I need suggestions for a bumper for this thing, because it's not going away. A little ranty segment with just random things. So, keep that in mind, folks, and go ahead and send those suggestions also over to ohreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Alrighty, so into potpourri. These are in no particular order. We just kind of threw them in here. So, Donald Trump, he's made a lot of claims. And Mother Jones, an interesting, webzine, has collected all the things that he has so far said that he's promised to do his first day in office as president. Oh, wow, that's a long list.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, shall we go round robin here and just read one off?
And okay. possibly make a little bit of commentary on it, depending on which ones they are, just because...
Certainly.
Yeah.
Well, most of them he can't actually do. In fact, almost
especially
all of them,
not in one day.
Almost all of them he can't do. Well, he could repeal the executive orders,
but that would still take time.
It would take time
to draft those.
That would also take an executive order.
Yeah, he would be making an executive order to get rid of an executive order. So he'd be starting off with that. So,
and that still has to be drafted in a legal fashion. You can't just do... You might be able to do one in a day.
But he knows people. He knows the best people. Because he will have other people do it.
Remember, and then he'll just sign it.
He has the best words. So his he has said that he will repeal every single Obama executive order. He has also pledged more specifically to eliminate every unconstitutional executive order.
Ant doesn't even know the Constitution.
No, he really doesn't.
What's unconstitutional?
No.
Yeah.
He also wants to repeal Obamacare. Shocking, because, well, that's in the... that's in the party platform, so that's not really a surprise at all.
Yeah, it says twice. The first thing you say, because they actually have, for anyone following along in the home game who is looking at this and going through the websites, every single one of these quotes is actually has a web link to it to where he stated these things.
Yeah.
The repeal Obamacare was that whole, yes, he's going, day one, he's going to repeal Obamacare. The website, his actual campaign website, says that he promises only to ask Congress on day one to repeal Obamacare. Because, yeah, the executive cannot repeal a law that has already been passed.
Just for the people out there, how
this actually works. The laws and the repealing thereof, mm-hmm. unless they violate the Constitution, are entirely about the legislature, which means Congress, the executive, has not a damn thing to do with it. Other than nicely asking.
Zip, zero, nil, yeah. and... Correct me if I'm wrong here, but hasn't Congress already tried to vote to get rid of Obamacare something like 60 times?
More than that.
It's happened a lot. There has been high volume of this trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I stopped counting at 56.
And this is with a Republican Congress. And they still just can't get it done.
No.
Because, well, let's face it, it hasn't been this catastrophic thing that they've all claimed, and it's helped a number of people. It's hurt some people, too.
It
was not executed well.
You know, I'm against it. But
like Medicare Part D.
Reasons of, like a lot of people say, it doesn't go anywhere near far enough.
Right.
Yeah, no, we need a single-payer system like 2 decades ago.
Now, if that was what, you know, because they always shout... Repeal and replace. Repeal and replace.
What are you going to replace it with?
What are you going to replace it with? If you're going to replace it with single payer, I'm on board. I'm on board. Come on, let's do that.
Get behind that, and guess what? I will say it now. I will start voting Republican for the Republicans who are pushing for that.
I will never vote Republican as long as all the other horrible all
social
the other horrible things.
Economic policy that is pretty much high, die. If you're poor, please die.
Yeah, I can't be a one-issue voter, you know, and they have so many issues, individual issues, that I'm strictly on the other side of that, you know, I can't go with them.
I guess I have to agree with you on that one.
You know, Planned Parenthood, all the abortion things, you know, basically women's rights to be a woman and be a, like, person. Right of personhood, I think, is what
people.
We're looking at.
I don't actually mean that just for people who other.
No, I know. That's what they say, basically, behind closed doors.
I read too much of this crap on a daily basis.
Yeah. End the war on coal. Do we have a war on coal?
We don't have a war on coal. We have a war on climate change. And coal just happens to be a product that changes our climate.
Again,
the war on coal thing is just to try and get the coal mining states on its side.
Yeah, that's all that is.
This actually comes from thehill.com from August 8th of 2016. Especially from Governor Mike Pence on Monday said his running mate Donald Trump will not undermine the coal industry should he become president. In quote, Donald Trump is going to end the war on coal on day one of his administration, he said during a campaign stop in Sioux City, Iowa, on Monday evening. We're going to free up coal production in this country for the American people, a.k.a. all those nice environmental regulations, the things that keep, you know, toxic chemicals and crap coming out of coal plants to get into all your water, your food supply, the air you breathe. They're just standing in the way of us actually getting cold of the American people, so we're just going to get rid of those. That's pretty much what they're saying.
As well as upholding our part in the Paris Accords.
Oh, well, that's going to go away, too. I'm sure that's in here somewhere. Okay, so war on coal. Begin swiftly removing criminal illegal immigrants from this country. More specifically, Trump has promised to do this in his first hour in office. Day one, before the wall, before anything.
If I may.
Oh, please. Please.
So, okay, we have already had a tradition of, when it comes to foreign nationals who are criminals, of deportation. We do that already. It's created this series of criminal organizations throughout Central America. Do some research on MS-13. They are a Central South American and here in the U.S. gang that is pretty much made up of primarily criminals who have been deported. They are incredibly violent, they're put together, and they're here. Deportation just moves the criminal back down the ladder that they climb. It doesn't do much. They end up back here, usually within 2 years.
The Mexicans, by the way, don't like Trump.
Oh, surprise.
God, no.
I'm just going through a little slideshow here of anti-Trump propaganda images that have come up quite nicely. Skip ahead, thank you. There we go. That's a nice one. Ooh. Rape Trump? Oh, my. Some interesting piñatas to burn an effigy. Oh, wow. That's a create. Wow.
That's horrifying.
That is truly horrifying. Wow, that's real hair, too. Okay.
Next thing, we have the wall. And then right after the wall is more wall.
Yeah. Meet with Homeland Security officials and generals to begin securing the southern border. Yeah, it's not going to happen. There's not going to be a wall. That's simply not something that's going to happen. We wouldn't even do it if kaiju were walking in.
More importantly, let's go back to the actual military thing and military idea of defensive strategies long-term don't work because somebody will always build a bigger weapon or something to defeat that particular defensive thing. We're going to build a wall, okay. How deep are you going to dig this wall?
Yeah, exactly. It's
because that's great, because they will tunnel under it. It'll just take longer.
No, they already dig tunnels underneath the border.
Yeah. It's like, we're going to dig it, 200 feet down. Okay, then it'll take them an extra month to dig the 220 feet.
Yeah, they have some that have, like, rail cars in them. I mean, it's silly.
Let's be honest. They're impressive and industrious people when it comes to digging.
They absolutely are. They absolutely
all
are.
You're going to do is slow it down. You're not going to change anything.
Yeah.
But what they are doing, though, is making it less appetizing at all to come to the United States.
Well, also, how are you going to pay for this thing?
Oh, we're going
to pay for it.
Well, they're going to make Mexico pay for it, which they're not going to pay for it.
What are they? Again, there's a number of things.
If they pay for it, it'd be to keep Trump out.
You're just on top of this. You've built the wall.
Yep.
Great. How are you going to pay to maintain it? How are you going to pay to police it? Where's this money coming from?
I don't know, but apparently it's got to be beautiful, too. So there's, I guess this would be a beautification project. And not only that, but what about the wildlife? Because it's going to prevent migrations of animals across the border.
Yeah,
but he doesn't care about the environment.
No. No, that's already him. I think we've got him on tape. We could roll the tape, but we're not going to. Wall. Notify all countries that refuse to take back dangerous illegal immigrants who have committed crimes in this country that they will lose access to our visa programs if they continue to do so.
which actually defines us, not the countries.
I kind of like the idea here, but then I go, okay.
How the hell are you?
What
do you
classify as a dangerous illegal immigrant, and what crimes will they have committed? Are you classifying as, oh, look, they have overstayed their visa, or they're in this country illegally? Obviously, they are dangerous and criminal, so we have to take them out, or only ones who've committed, say, a violent offense? You know, less than 10% or less than 3% of the actual immigrants in the country.
Oh, wow. That's actually out at DonaldJTrump.com in a press release.
Mm. That's ballsy.
Yeah. So that's not even, like, off the top of his head. No, that had some thought behind it.
Also, in closing off those visas, it closes off one of the biggest things that we did after World War II, which was the, for lack of a term, smart person visa. Hi, you're smart. You're scientifically gifted. We want you here. We've been poaching the best and brightest
H-1A
from the
visa
rest of the
or
world.
Something? Was it H-1B?
I think that's precisely it. We've been poaching the best and the brightest from across the world for decades.
Yeah. That's not going to stop.
You're going to stop it?
That's not going to stop, because all the momentum behind Silicon Valley is going to get behind that and say, no, we need them. We really need them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on.
Yeah.
I love the next one.
Same thing.
Convene his top generals and inform them that they have 30 days to come up with a plan to stop ISIS.
Which, by the way, was his plan to
Does
stop
it
ISIS.
Involve nukes? Because as somebody who understands a little bit about military requirements, 30 days, that's about the only option you got, because you cannot deploy a large enough force in 30 days.
Well, you could do surgical strikes in, you know, less time, but you also already have to be on a complete war footing in order to come up with a short-term plan like that, because otherwise, nothing is mobilized.
Also, I mean...
But this is just 30 days...
What's your definition of ISIS?
This is 30 days to come up with a plan.
Yeah.
Not 30 days to implement the plan, 30 True. Days to come up with the plan.
Whatever.
And what do you think all of the top generals have been doing their entire term as being generals?
Since this started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think they don't already have these plans? They could probably just whip out a folder and say, I got all these.
Yeah.
But none of them are going to work because...
Well,
X reason.
Know about U.S. military and when it comes to military planning. Oh, no, I guarantee you the idea of absolute full mobilization of the United States military and a total invasion of Syria and Iraq and completely wiping out their entire organization, essentially taking them over as American, not necessarily, kind of puppet states, at least temporarily, is one of the possible plans. And most of the generals will go, this is a really bad idea, but this is a possibility.
I mean, the only... Oh, and here's a terrible idea. Want to hear a terrible idea?
Sure, let's go for it.
The problem is that we don't have any exit strategies when we do this. When we invade another country, we go there, we kick some ass, and then we run out of chewing gum, and then we have to leave.
Yeah.
And when we leave, there is then a power vacuum, which is then immediately filled by warlords.
The corrupt...
Just people that want to come in, people that have an axe to grind, they're ready to do it. We've weakened the infrastructure by coming in and doing these things, and we make it ready-made for them to come in and take over.
Yeah.
So the only other thing we could do is never leave, and I think make them a state.
Yeah.
Permanently.
Make them a territory.
Make it a territory. Just start annexing all these countries. And run them.
Go over well.
It's a terrible idea.
Yeah, back in the day, we used to have exit strategies. I remember the first Gulf War. We had an exit strategy, and we implemented it.
I think we could just colonize. We just need to go straight colonial on them.
Let's go. Let's go straight imperial America.
There
let's
you go.
Do it.
Yeah. Most of these countries already think that's what we're doing.
I don't feel like
on the ground. I really
legitimizing them.
No, I already paraphrased this whole thing by saying this is a terrible idea.
Oh, yeah. No, horrific idea.
This is a terrible idea. But in Trump America, maybe it's not the bad idea. And well, that's sad.
We'll have to look at it. We're also, you know, approaching our, what is it, 240th, approaching our 250th birthday of this country. Maybe it's time to follow dear old mom and, you know, having a country where the sun never sets on it.
Ah, yes, the sun never sets on America's Navy. That's for sure, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. So, yeah. Fix the Department of Veterans Affairs.
How?
I think we can just agree that needs to be done regardless, however.
Yeah.
I will say, though, it is better than it used to be. As bad as it is, it is better than it used to be.
Yeah, but still, what's the plan? Just say, this is Beatitudes. Again, unless you have a plan that we can sit down and go, okay, that actually sounds like promising, or this will never work. Just saying, fix the Department of Veterans Affairs and doing that on the first day, unless you have a plan, all you're going to do is go, hey, can we have a plan to fix the Department of Veterans Affairs? Can you get that to me by, you know, the end of the first year?
Well, yeah, that's pretty much all it is. I don't know. Okay. Call the heads of major companies who are moving operations overseas to inform them that they'll face 35% tariffs.
The executive branch can't do that. Congress can.
Yeah. But
the executive branch can't just impose tariffs.
Yeah. Oh, just going back, I had to check something. You said Beatitudes? I think you meant platitudes.
Platitudes, yes.
Because Beatitude is a supreme blessedness.
Yes.
And it's like, wait a second, I think only the pontiff can do that. And then we're turning Trump
into a wonderful time this week.
We're turning Trump into the Pope, and that's just the worst thing.
I do believe he is might just be downright the Pope America.
You take that back. I'm gonna kick you in the mouth.
But it's Trump. Look what he's done for all of us poor folk out there, showing us who to hate proper and good like.
Moving on.
I think I've had that conversation.
Later.
That's real people.
Yeah.
You're saying things like real people do. Oh.
Yeah. Again, folks, I have watched too much crap.
Yeah, okay.
I have seen too many things.
All right.
Brain damage.
So contact countries and say, folks, we love protecting you. We want to continue to protect you, but you're not living up to the bargain. They're not,
well done.
They're not paying what they're supposed to be paying, which is very little, by the way.
Oh, wait. You mean they're not paying their fair share?
Like you've never paid your fair share? There are still contractors that he hasn't paid.
Yeah.
Well, beyond that, just, again, the whole, oh my God, wealth redistribution. You know, people paying their fair share. Yeah.
They're going to defend the unborn.
Yeah, I actually pulled up that article.
Yeah, Pence Trump administration will begin fight against abortion rights day one. That's lovely.
Yeah, Pence declaring he wants to send Roe v. Wade to the ash heap of history where it belongs.
Direct quote.
Something Trump has promised to do with his Supreme Court appointments. Pence boasted of his own record opposing abortion rights and ran down a litany of anti-choice policies that a Trump White House would champion. Yeah.
Okay, so if he's going to champion, then I think that we need trial by combat and we need to pick another champion.
How's Half-Thor doing right now? What's he up to?
I am all for Half-Thor for president. Let's go.
If it's Trump versus... I'd pick Tyrion. Just, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Withdraw from the TPP. Good. Okay. I'm down with that. I don't think he knows what's in it either.
No, he doesn't.
So... start taking care of our military.
..
Our military. Start taking care of our military. Yeah, that's the ticket. That's so strange.
I would like to plan.
Yeah.
Give us an actual statement of what you mean by that.
Wouldn't that be taking care of our military or taking care of our veterans? Is he conflating the two?
Hey. Don't you dare say that M1 Abrams tank doesn't have feelings.
Really?
I'm trying to go where this is going with this.
It's like, is this Cars now, or are we in a Pixar movie? Okay. suspend Syrian refugee settlement. Okay.
Which will just make us villains even more in the eyes of the global community.
Yep, not going to do a whole lot for our image. Notify our NAFTA partners of my intention to renegotiate the deal.
That actually comes from his website.
Yep, that's direct from there. Okay. Designate China as a currency manipulator. Also from his website. Now, what would that do, though? Anything?
No, not really.
It would mess with trade with them because, again, in the international realm of things, people who actually directly manipulate their own currency or countries that do it, it causes problems on that big macro scale of country-to-country relations. On a smaller scale, not really going to do a damn thing.
Huh. Okay. Direct every agency in government to begin identifying all wasteful, job-killing regulations, and they are going to be removed.
Yeah.
No.
No, hold on. Let's break this down just a little bit.
We don't have time for that. That's a whole show.
Yeah, but just the idea of direct every agency.
Yeah.
So I don't even... will literally shut down as every single agency now starts going through all of the regulations, some of them almost none, and start looking for everything that is wasteful and job-killing.
They'll just tell one of the Bobs in the back to go ahead and, you know, okay, so we're going to take you off this duty, and now this is going to be your thing. You got to do this from now on, and we'll talk to you later. Enjoy. So that's not a thing that can really happen.
No.
Good luck. You know, we've been doing this show for a while now, and every other week, I'm finding a government agency that I didn't know existed. In the news, doing something big. And it's like, what? What is this? What is this three-letter, four-letter, five-letter agency? I have no idea what this is. Shocking. So, maybe removing the whole agency is a good idea. But, oh, look, they're doing things that are important.
The Administration on Aging.
I'm sorry, Cylon, what was that?
Get rid of gun-free zones in schools and military bases. It makes me sick.
Yeah. I want my children's elementary school to be a gun-free zone. I want the middle schools to be gun-free zones. I want the high schools to be gun-free zones. I don't want guns around children.
Yeah, I don't want guns in high school. I'm actually also against guns in college. I'm like, guys, you don't need this. Now, if you do, then that's the point for the campus police and such to deal with.
Yeah.
Not random people and students.
If you talk to legitimate law enforcement people that are on the ground, that have been in the shooter situations, if you have a gun and not a police uniform in a shooter situation, you are now a target of the people with the guns and the uniforms.
Yep.
You are not helping.
Knowing.
Yeah. You have now made yourself a target of, quote, the good guys. That's not a good thing.
There's uniforms for a reason.
Yeah. Okay. Ask Congress to pass Kate's Law, named for Kate Steinle, to ensure that criminal aliens convicted of illegal reentry receive strong mandatory minimum sentences. What? Oh, God, it's out on Breitbart.
Yeah, sure. Breitbart, gotta love it.
Yeah. Okay. Wow, this is a lot. Jinkies. Okay, moving on. And learn the differences between Hezbollah and Hamas. Well, that's good. I think he should learn the differences between Hezbollah and Hamas.
And I believe he can do that on the first day.
I believe he can. He could probably do that over some toast. Actually, just in the morning.
Yeah, he can do that in a small briefing.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, that will probably be part of the small briefing, the first one he would get.
Now, Mother Jones also went through and said the things that Hillary Clinton has made for day one promises. tackle the gun lobby to try to reduce the outrageous number of people who are dying from gun violence in our country. That's going to be a multi-day process, I think.
But she can have a meeting.
She can have a meeting. A little press conference, maybe. Reach out to Republicans and say, this is your chance to help millions of families and show that your party, the party of Lincoln, is better than Donald Trump.
That's a meeting.
Yeah. Work with both parties to pass the biggest investment in new, good-paying jobs since World War II. Is she looking at a new deal?
Let's hit the link.
Oh, is a tweet.
it's just a tweet.
It's just a tweet.
It doesn't go anywhere.
It's just a tweet.
I mean, if she actually had a plan for a new deal,
that's
sweet.
Tweet.
Let's dive in.
It's a tweet.
Just a platitude.
It is a tweet. Okay. So that was fun. Oh my. You know what? I think a little aperitif here.
Hi, O'Reilly Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye!
Okay, so onward and upward, or downward.
Downward.
Trump calls for police to take guns during stop and frisks.
Because remember, he's really all pro-gun. Mm-hmm. He wants everybody to have guns, Second Amendment, all about it, loves the Second Amendment, unless you happen to be black.
Okay, so Fox was interviewed by Fox and Friends. Trump was interviewed by Fox and Friends. It's like, what did I say? Yeah, I said that. Okay. Basically, they will, if they see, you know, they're proactive, and if they see a person possibly with a gun, or they think may have a gun, they will see the person, and they will look, and they will take the gun away. They will stop, they will frisk, and they will take the gun away, and they don't have anything to shoot with.
Now, here's my question.
Okay.
What about all those states that have passed open carry?
I don't think he knows what that means.
What about states where they have lessened the restrictions on certification?
No, the problem is, I think he knows exactly what that means, but in his view, I hate to bring this point up, but it's what I've seen. It's thinks it's something that he only sees white people having. Because for anyone out there who's looked at the stop and frisk thing, for anybody who's really familiar with it, or who's not, it started in like New York, where cops were allowed to, if you were acting in a suspicious manner, the cops could stop you, order you to stop, and do a full body frisk on you to see if you were carrying any illegal items, drugs, etc. You know, with the idea of, okay, this might stop crime, everything else. Within a couple of months, the statistics came back and was showing the overwhelming majority of all people who were stopped and frisked were either black or Latino.
Yeah,
almost no whites were ever stopped and frisked.
Oh, what a surprise!
Well, that's because they only find that the black and Latino communities are suspicious, apparently.
Yeah,
and it's a self-generating cycle, because what they do is that they'll go with their instinct, and their instinct is, hey, those people are shady, because they've been taught their whole lives that those people are shady. And then as they go through these programs, they then generate the statistics that find out that those people are shady because they're the ones that keep getting stopped and frisked. And then it eats the cycle. It's the snake that eats itself self-fulfilling prophecy.
Also, again, I keep coming back to with all this policing stuff. What happened to community policing?
Wait, you mean where the officers would actually get down and, like, press the flesh and talk to the people and get to know them and see what the community needed from the civil servants, the police officers?
Yeah.
Community? That
walking
kind of thing?
Your beat and actually knowing the people on it.
Yeah, well, what happened, I think, there was in many of these, the beats, they became really, really scared and ended up getting full body armor. And somebody in full body armor doesn't look like they want to go to a barbecue. They look like they want to go to a riot.
Well, speaking of riots and getting slightly off topic, during the protests in Charleston, during the protests in Charlotte, a lot of the protesters were carrying mirrors, and they were literally walking up to the police lines and just showing the mirrors to the cops.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of the cops just couldn't look at the mirrors. They just couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you had the guy walking around with a shirt, you know, with free hugs and was giving them, you know, walking up to that line and giving people hugs and everything else, and they were, some of the cops were breaking down and crying just for the fact, in this really tense situation, here's this guy, it's just, hey man, need a hug?
Yeah. Oh my God, compassion.
But about policing, yeah, it still happens in some places and sometimes primarily it's a officer by officer thing. It's not like the department does it. I've actually listened to some of the NPR stories on this where some of the or very small precincts have gone, why don't we just start doing this? And they become, yeah, that neighborhood, you know, instead of running away, the people are actually calling the cops, or the cops will just be pulling in the neighborhood, stop and, you know, start playing basketball with people and just saying, hey, what's up? How's things going? You know, and they see crime go down because, well, look, the police, at least these certain officers are now trusted because they're known.
Again,
and they're one of us. Just, okay, you're here to help us.
It used to be part of just being a cop that you would, you would talk to people. You would just stop and do small things to help. Not your normal stuff that we think of, little cops only, you know, stop people and arrest people. No, it used to be that they would help out. There were community meetings. I mean, the entire late night basketball thing was to help with at-risk youth.
Yeah.
And it used to be a huge thing in the 90s.
It gives them an outlet. It puts them in a safe place.
And it allowed the cops to get to know these kids and to be part of their lives in a positive fashion.
Yeah.
Also, again, you can police better. You can police easier if the community that you're servicing trusts you.
Many of the punishments for some agencies is actually someone will be taken off the beat and they'll have to do community service in community centers with the people, which is actually probably the best thing ever, because then they actually have to deal with them and it humanizes them, because the worst thing is it's an us versus them mentality. Police versus everyone else to keep the rule of law and to hold the line.
Well, another thing that was brought up, I can't remember, I want to attribute it correctly, but in all this dialogue that's going on, especially this week, is, hi, if your only interaction with African Americans is, you know, policing them, stopping them, questioning them, you don't see them as human. If that's your only interaction, it dehumanizes those individuals. If the only time that you interact with minorities is when you're on the job and your job is to occasionally, you know, stop people in a violent fashion, then you're just going to have a negative outlook on those individuals and you're going to be suspicious of every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know, talk about, you know, making
America
great again and going back to the good old days, talking about this setup. Again, I want to go back to the days where the Andy Griffith Cup.
Yeah, I was just thinking existed, Andy Griffith.
Where it was just, it's just the guy who does that particular job. The gun is there, but it's an absolute last resort. And he's just this family guy in your town who's here to help you. You know, like it used to be.
Yeah. Just got a note in from one of our cohorts here on the show. Fred just said that the new Blair Witch was really good. Okay. Apparently, it is scaring people to tears. A quality scare flick. So, that's Fred's pick.
Yeah, Fred sitting in picks. Well done, Fred.
There you go. Okay. So, stop and frisk, generally a bad idea because it's super racial. Because people are kind of racial. It's just a thing. So, let's move along. So, I did not put this one in. Okay. Chechnya. English speakers told...
English speakers told to use new name for the Czech Republic.
Oh. This is the Czech Republic?
Yes. The Czech Republic wants to now be known to all English speakers as Chechia.
I don't think I can do that.
Because Czech Republic is hard to market. They want a one-word name. They're also telling, you know, the Germans that it should be Chechen, and the French that Czechi. All translations of Chesko in Czech. That's what they're pushing. Huh. The hope is that it will improve the nation's identity and make it easier for companies to use the new title on products, name tags, and sports jerseys. Now, you would ask, why won't they just change it to Czech since it's the Czech Republic? Apparently because the word Nazis out there say Czech is an adjective, so that can't be possibly the name of nation.
It's an adjective?
Yes, Czech is an adjective, apparently. Now, there are a number of people outside of the Czech Republic's government that think this is a bad idea. Because, as we just saw, some people might confuse it with the Russian Republic of Chechnya. While others say, especially those of the former Eastern Bloc, that it's too close to Cheka, which is one of the original names of the KGB.
Searches related to Czech, Czech people, Czech language, Czech pronunciation, Czech religion, Czech culture, Czech currency, Czech food, Czech names. I don't think that it's a word Nazi thing. I think that they just... Chechia? Chechia?
Chechia.
Chechia. I will always think it's a Chia pet now. I cannot help that. That is my nationalized programming.
Actually, it could be Chechia.
It could be Chechia, but that sounds like Kesha.
But it doesn't sound like Chechnya.
No.
Okay.
So that's why I think it's even more likely that it's pronounced Chechia.
Have any other nations that you know of rebranded themselves?
Not to my memory.
Like the only thing they've done is change their name for marketing purposes. I've seen companies do this, but not countries.
Nations.
Yeah.
Well, again, just going through the American minds that we have gathered here, what do we know about the Czech Republic? I know that I know of only one city in the Czech Republic, and that's Prague.
Well, yeah.
It was an amazing center for spying during the Cold War.
Yeah, center of several things. I think for the Man from U.N.C.L.E. Everything that I think of horrible cars, beautiful old buildings, and a lot of Russian Cold War stuff. That's really all I think of.
The other things I think of, just because of some of my friends, is hey, you want to get recreationist steel on the cheap, you get Czech steel. It's quality, and it's cheap to import.
And they have some beautiful people.
Artisan goods. They have some really good artisan goods. Also cheap to import. But that's it. So, yeah, they want that delicious tourist dollar.
Yeah.
They want to be able to market their country better than just, hey, it's former Eastern Bloc.
Textiles, so.
You know what? Hey, if it works for them, good on you.
Yeah, pretty
much. Whatever your name is, call us, write us, however. Yes, I'm talking us, the show. Cheshire, or however you want to say your name. Tell us how to say your name, and by God, we'll say it correctly.
So the...
I just thought this was too quaint not
it's
to
neat.
Address.
Let's see. What's their currency currently valued at? They've got the Koruna. Koruna is their currency. And one Koruna is 4 cents American. Yeah. 4 cents. 0.04154 dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means, really. But yeah,
it's that you should be vacationing in Czechia.
Probably. Yeah.
I love that exchange rate.
Unless bread costs, you know, a phenomenally large number, and then it's like, do you take plastic? Because I'm not going to hold that number of, 4 cent dollar bills. Okay, so that's interesting. That's definitely an oh really. And on to the Washington Post. Ah, just 3%. That is the number of adults in America that own half of all the guns.
Half the guns are just in 3% of adult hands.
Yes.
Why?
Yeah, the conception of gun ownership. 78% of American adults, 19% of American adults, 3% of American adults. So 78% of adult Americans don't own any guns whatsoever. 19% own 50% of the guns. And the other 50% are owned by 3%. Those are people with arsenals. A lot of guns.
Why? There are plenty of other things to collect.
Now, there's more. 17 guns apiece is what that comes out to.
Why?
That's a lot
okay,
of guns.
I've got a shotgun for home defense. I've got maybe one or two handguns to go out to the range, fire with my buddies. And I've got a hunting rifle. All right, so that comes to about 5 guns. I can see 5 guns. 5 guns, reasonable. Why do you need 17 guns?
Look, unless you're not necessarily 17, but if you're high stakes or high going out there doing a lot of types of hunting, then no, I can see different calibers of rifles depending on what you're trying to take down, at what range you're likely to engage those things at. But again, I'm also looking at almost all of those weapons are going to be bolt actions.
But why do you need 17 guns, Steve? Why?
You don't need 17 guns. Even in that case, you're still looking at like maybe 6. You're going to be in that 19% category.
Again, I would say probably 12 or less, depending on what it is you're doing. But again,
yeah,
you're looking at varying calibers.
Why do you need 12 guns, Steve? Seriously, why do you need 12 guns? Please.
Again, it depends. I'll say it depends on what you're hunting.
Okay.
Certain
calibers. No.
Hmm?
I want a list. I seriously want a list. Why? What?
12.
What 12 guns?
Just the 12.
What 12 guns are you going to need?
All right. I will try to come up with that list, and I will try to come up with a specific list, including specific guns.
Can't do it off the top of your head, can you, though? You can't do it.
No, because I don't hunt like that.
Again, so 12 guns. Why do you need 12?
But I know a lot of hunters who have them, but it's all and have numbers of that level. But it's all because, okay, well, this is for dealing with bears. This is for hunting bears. This is for hunting a moose. This is for hunting an elk at 400 yards. This is for that.
I still say you don't need double-digit numbers.
I know people that do, like, trap shooting and things like that, where, you know, it's a sport. And, of course, people that play a sport are going to have lots of the toys that go along with that sport. And they were still under 10. Well under 10.
Again, I can see, okay, I do, you know, skeet shooting.
Yeah.
Recreation skeet shooting. And I go to the range sometimes. I like to use a handgun. Okay. Yeah. And maybe if it's a really nice outdoor range, maybe a rifle. Okay.
Yeah.
I still don't see more than 9 guns.
Yeah. I don't know. Now, also some interesting statistics here. You know, according to this, based on the percentage of people owning guns,
we only reason my mind possess more than 9 guns would be if you are a collector of antique firearms. That would be the only reason.
Well, just a collector in general of things like that, yeah. Okay, hang on. Based on the percentage of people owning guns and the number of guns that respondents reported owning, the survey estimates that 265 million guns are in circulation, or more than one for every adult. This is lower than other estimates, which put the number of guns in circulation at 300 million or more, which is a gun for nearly every man, woman, and child breathing in the country. In fact, let's see here. Okay, Google.
Current population of the United States is around 300.
What is the current population of the United States?
The population of the United States of America was 318.9 million in 2014.
Ah, it's gone up.
318.9 million. In 2014. So we can probably round that to maybe 320.
Let's go with 320 million. I like round numbers.
Yeah. 320 is easier to say, because otherwise it would be 319, and that's just weird. So, 320 million people in the United States of America in 2016. And there's a gun, pretty much, for all of them. However, 3% of that number, actually it's 3% of, and even more rarefied, because it's only the adults. So, no one under the age of 18. 3%. Own 50% of the guns.
We have a problem.
That's a lot of guns.
We have
a
gun problem.
That's a lot of guns. However, 78% don't have anything.
And so running the numbers here, so assume 300 million guns using that status, using 320 million people, and using the 3%. That means 9.6 million people own 150 million guns. Let that number sink in, populace.
Go ahead and say that again for the people in the back.
9.6 million people. The total of 9.6 million people own 150 million guns.
Jeez. Okay. So that's a staggering number. And I think we should move right along.
Are you annoyed by misinformation spreading like crazy, and you want to stop the flood of nonsense coming from all directions? Go to Wikipedia, as do all those millions out there. Did you know there's an edit button on all Wikipedia articles? Why don't you go and hit that button to start making the world's largest online encyclopedia a more reliable source of information? If you're specifically interested in skeptical topics, come and join us at Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia, an international endeavor to change the world for the better, word by word. There are many ways you can contribute. You just need to start. you speak several languages, all the more reason to join us. We provide training and all the help you need. If you want to make a change, there's a nice community waiting for you out there. Contact us at gsowteam@gmail.com, visit our website, that's gorillaskeptics.com, or check out the Gorilla Skepticism on Wikipedia Facebook page.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
If you're scientifically literate, the world looks very different to you. It's not just a lot of mysterious things happening. There's a lot we understand out there. And that understanding empowers you.
If you base medicine on science, you cure people. If you base the design of planes on science, they fly. If you base the design of rockets on science, they reach the moon. It works. Bitches.
It's science time on O'Reilly Radio. Astronomers have discovered the biggest structure in the known universe. Now, space is big. I mean, it's really fantastically, amazingly big. You just don't know how big it really is. And of course, I've butchered that quote, but you get the point. So a new find, the discovery of the Boss Great Wall, a group of superclusters that span roughly 1 billion light years across and represent the largest structure ever found. The Boss Great Wall sounds aptly named for its size, but actually stands for Baryon Oscillation Spectroscope Survey, is a string of superclusters connected by gases laying roughly and go away. Okay. laying roughly 4.5 to 6.5 billion light years away from Earth. Thanks to gravity, these superclusters stay connected and swirl together through the void of space. So, though it's not really like an artificial structure, which is kind of what that kind of lent, you know, maybe that's what it is. No. It is just an artifact of an entity kind of thing that can all be clumped together as one thing that is about a billion light years across.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Oh, God, yes.
So, okay. It takes 8 minutes for the light from our star, the sun, Sol, to reach Earth. About 8 minutes. Depending on, of course, what apogee we're at in our revolving around.
But roughly.
Roughly 8 minutes. So those are 8 light minutes, because that's the time it takes light to travel, you know. Yeah. So 8 billion light years. So the light from a star at one end would take a billion years to reach the other end. The Earth itself is roughly 4.5 billion years old.
Yeah.
Fantastically, amazingly big, huge, and man, I wish we could go into space and actually see these things and play all Star Trek and go hyperspace and, you know,
well,
and see things.
That.
What do you got about that?
I'm actually trying to pull up the article now so I can link it in the show notes.
Do it. Do it.
Because
are you talking the warp drive?
The ISS Enterprise.
Huh?
Which is the concept for the actual faster-than-light ship that NASA has designed.
Oh, yeah, the one that has the ring around it.
It looks so cool, though.
For space warping goodness.
Yeah, I flip it. It looks cool. And I'm just one of these... You know, as far as we've seen... Yeah, it doesn't look like anything you've seen for, you know, hard science fiction. You know, a lot of these ships you see... But this ship, if we can ever get this thing running, it just looks absolutely awesome to me.
This guy right here.
Yes. Because they're always trying to figure out, because according to all of the actual equations and everything else, including Einstein, warp drive will work. It literally is, as Star Trek explained in several groups who've analyzed that show and looked at it, go, what it does is it expands space behind itself and contracts it in front of itself.
And you ride the wave.
And you ride the wave. You can then travel at whatever speed you want, but because you're actually shortening the distance, you are traveling faster than light.
Yeah, because...
as far as everything on the outside, but you are not experiencing any relativistic shift because you yourself actually aren't traveling any faster.
Right. You're moving space around you while you stay still.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Which also prevents us from, you know, being squashed.
But it's two rings of exotic matter. Essentially, it's dark energy rings. And, you know, they're of course, this is all concept. It's not yet even close to being built. But they're also going, all the science and all the calculations and all everything's showing,
we should
be able to build this. And this is probably what it will end up looking like when we finally build the ship, because it would be able to actually contain the energies and warp it to the proper specifications to make the thing go.
Oh, and here's the paper. I'm going to link the paper. We'll just put the straight up paper right into our science segment here.
So there's every possibility, Andy, within our lifetimes, we might see the launch of Earth's first FTL ship.
That would be nice.
Of course, we could also see the launch of the ship and arrive at Mars, and somebody steps out of a wormhole.
Yes, that would be lovely, too. I'd be fine with that.
So would I.
Go get my train ticket now. Okay. All right, so moving on into the medical realm. A report out on ScienceDaily.com. Fungus in humans identified for the first time as a key factor in Crohn's disease. This made a lot of people like weep with joy that something has actually been discovered. So the summary of the paper, a fungus has been identified as a key factor in the development of Crohn's disease. An international team of researchers has identified for the first time. A Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine-led team of international researchers has for the first time identified the fungus as a key factor in the development of Crohn's disease. The researchers also linked a new bacterium to the previous bacteria associated with Crohn's. The groundbreaking findings, published on September 20th in MBio, could lead to potential new treatments and ultimately cures for the debilitating inflammatory bowel disease, which causes severe abdominal pain, diarrhea, weight loss, and fatigue. Quoting, we already know the bacteria, in addition to genetic and dietary factors, play a major role in causing Crohn's disease. This was stated by study's senior and corresponding author, Muhammad A. Ganalm, PhD professor with the director of the Center for Medical Mycology at Case Western Reserve University Hospital's Cleveland Medical Center. Essentially, patients with Crohn's have abnormal immune responses to these bacteria, which inhabit the intestines of all people. While most researchers focus their investigation on these bacteria, few have examined the role of fungi, which are also present in everyone's intestines. Did you know that there are mushrooms living in your guts?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, the majority of you is them.
Well, bacteria, but I didn't know fungus.
Yeah. We have flora and fauna living in our intestines, and it's the reason why, you know, you poop normally. When you stop pooping normally, a lot of times it can be because something is happening in there, like, I don't know, like, essentially a section get clear cut of the forest of them, and now it's not happening correctly.
Yeah. Our study adds significant new information to understanding why some people develop Crohn's disease. Equally important, it can result in a new generation of treatments, including medications and probiotics, which hold the potential for making qualitative and quantitative differences in the lives of people suffering from Crohn's. Both bacteria and fungi are microorganisms, infinitesimal forms of life that can only be seen with a microscope. Fungi are eukaryotes, organisms whose cell contains a nucleus they are closer to humans than bacteria, which are prokaryotes, single-celled life forms with no nucleus. Collectively, the fungal community that inhabits the human body is known as the microbiome, while the bacteria are called the microbiome, while the bacteria are called the bacterioome. And I'm not making that up. It's right here. Fungi and bacteria are present throughout the body. Previously, Gnum had found that people harbor between 9 and 23 fungal species in their mouths.
That's just the mouth.
That's
also, to correct it earlier, his name is not Muhammad. It's Mahmoud.
Mahmoud?
Mahmoud.
Oh, well, thank you. Mahmoud. Very sorry, sir. Mahmoud. Mahmoud Gaman. I'm sure that I'm mispronouncing the rest of your name as well, just to keep things straight.
Just keep on this and cure Crohn's disease.
Exactly, please. Yes, I'll buy you a beer.
It'd be nice
and
for us
then
to cure our disease.
Speak up.
It would be nice that we could, you know, cure our disease. That'd be great.
It would be fantastic, or at least get towards a better quality of life. Because it's bad. Let's see. Well, you know, it just goes on more about Crohn's disease itself, and I will leave that for you to look up later. And of course, these are in our show notes, available out at aurelieradio.com. Okay.
As a quick side note as to where this article came from, for anyone who's really hardcore into what's going on in the day-to-day lives of science and all the latest research is coming out in ways that a layman can possibly understand, though they go a little more than standard, sciencedaily.com is the website you want to go to. And they cover all science from all disciplines.
It's good stuff. Very, very good stuff. Okay. Now then, moving on to something a little bit more humorous. Hey, dude, what's your sign?
I know what mine is now. I know what technically it's been.
Now, I didn't really bother playing this game because I don't really buy it. Especially since when the Zodiac was originally found or, you know, codified in writing, the stars were in one place. Now it's several thousand years later, and all those stars are in another place.
They have shifted.
They have shifted because, oh my gosh, we move through space.
Our galaxy moves through space.
Yes. Our sun is actually moving, going with everything else. It takes something like 225 million years to go all the way around. I think. Something like that. Again, that would be something that you can Google, but that's a ballpark estimate. Apparently there are actually 13 astrological signs instead of 12, meaning that 86% of all people were actually born under a different sign. This is old news, but Capricorns, Sagittarii, and everyone between flipped out last week and incorrectly blamed NASA. However, the space agency would like everyone to know that they didn't actually change anything. Mm-hmm. NASA's reasoning, astrology isn't even real in the first place, so chill out, you superstitious dolts. It's right here. I'm not making that up. Don't blame me. Blame NASA.
Again, I learned in my actual astronomy class, that was my first class I took for college, my astronomy professor went out going, hi, do you know there's actually 13 zodiac signs now? And people in the class are, oh my god, and he, like me, is a proud Ophiuchian. We are not Sagittarians, we're Ophiuchus, represent. The 13th zodiac sign.
Okie dokie. Quoting, did you hear that NASA changed the zodiac signs? Nope, we definitely didn't. The agency posted Tuesday on its Tumblr, which feels like the appropriate medium. Here at NASA, we study astronomy, not astrology. The post, which is a masterclass on shade, continues, quote, we didn't change any zodiac signs, we just did the math. NASA then proceeds to explain that the former is a science that intelligent people devote their lives to, and the latter is hooey. Astrology is something else, NASA says. It's not science. No one has shown that astrology can be used to predict the future or describe that people are like based on birth dates. Astrology! NASA goes on to explain what happened. Some 3,000 years ago, the ancient Babylonians divided the zodiac into 12 pieces. Each slice was represented by a constellation that the sun would appear to pass through at differing points of the year as the Earth orbited the sun. The Babylonians, NASA said, cheated a bit. The sun didn't actually pass through each constellation for a consistent month-long time span. It varied immensely. On top of that, the Babylonians knew that there was a 13th constellation. Ophiuchian? Ophiuchus?
Ophiuchus.
Ophiuchus. Ophiuchus. But that wouldn't have lined up with their calendar, so they just didn't include it. Also, the sky has shifted because Earth's axis has changed a bit over the course of 3,000 years. To summarize, all NASA did was actually show what the zodiac really looks like. Didn't change zodiac signs, because honestly, NASA doesn't give a shit about whether you're a Leo or a Virgo, since astrology isn't real. This is just a wonderful article.
Well, I have to admit that astrology itself is real. I mean, it exists. The effects of it might not be real, but...
Well, it's a hobby. And I suppose some people can make money on it. I know several people that do.
For them. Find money where you can in this economy.
Yeah, but I would only put it up for entertainment value. I wouldn't say that it's actually going to be a guiding force in your life. That'd be like saying, let's see, this fortune cookie that I have here, impose not a burden on yourself, which you cannot bear yourself. The words to wisdom, of course. But then there's my lucky numbers. And I should probably definitely play these in the lotto.
I don't know. It depends on what those lucky numbers are for, man. It might not be lottery.
That's true, but there are six of them. Don't you need like an... I don't know. I haven't played in a long time. Isn't there like another one for Powerball? I don't know. Whatever. Okay. Somebody can, I'm sure, email me with the rules for how to play Powerball and understand all that, but I don't really care. Very much like the Zodiac. But, you know, if it were real, here's what your sign would be under the current 13-sign Zodiac chart. NASA added the 13th sign, Ophiuchus, and actually noted the dates when the sun actually passes through each sign, rather than dividing them up evenly and arbitrarily. On its website, NASA explains how, since the axis of Earth has tilted over the course of 3,000 years, the dates are slightly different than they were back then, since the path of the sun through the constellations has changed. It's unlikely that there will be another axis tilt large enough to change the dates in our lifetime. So the chart below is what you're stuck with. So, if you were born between January 20th and February 16th, you are a Capricorn. February 16th through March 11th, you are an Aquarius. March 11th through April 18th, Pisces. April 18th through May 13th, Aries. May 13th through June 21st, Taurus. June 21st through July 20th, Gemini. July 20th through August 10th, Cancer. Now, I noticed that they're saying, I guess, like noon on that day, since they're saying July 20th and then July 20th. They're not July 20th and July 21st. Mm-hmm. So I guess if it's like noon on that day, then, you know, that's when your dividing line should be. So you could be like on the cusp, I guess, or something, man. Something like that.
Totes.
Totally. So July 20th through August 10th, Cancer. August 10th through September 16th, Leo. September 16th through October 30th, Virgo. October 30th through November 23rd, Libra. I'm a Libra now. Huh. November 23rd through the 29th. 23rd through the 29th. Weep. You have a 6-day window to be a Scorpio. And November 29th through December 17th, you are Ophiuchus. And December 17th through January 20th, you are then a Sagittarius. Bum, bum, bum. So, there you go. Quite different, but all of a sudden, I'm a Libra. Wow. That changes that changes everything, man. I was a Scorpio.
You don't even know.
I was totally a Scorpio, man.
Totes.
So, with that, we'll move on. Oh, wow, that's so funny. Okay. On to more things in the future. Physicists are close to producing metallic hydrogen, and it could change everything.
Yes.
Think Speak up.
Hydrogen superconductors.
You're sounding very far away. I'm sorry.
Think about them.
Hydrogen superconductors?
Also, if they can create metallic hydrogen, it'll keep its form under extreme pressure. So, no loss of electrons during energy transfer. It'll be amazing.
Huh. Okay. So, in brief, it says, the implications of the discovery of hydrogen in metallic form make it a subject of great fervor. Teams are racing towards its use as a superconductor as well as a means of better understanding the universe. That is kind of vague.
They actually get to it near the end of the article. They actually get into this. If metallic hydrogen can be made to keep its metallic form after extreme pressure application, then it can be a superconductor capable of functioning at room temperature.
Oh. Metallic hydrogen as a room temperature superconductor.
Yeah.
Well, that's like the Grail.
Yeah.
We kind of been chasing that that one for a long time. Because folks, weird things happen with superconductors. They're just very strange and awesome. And you can do amazing things with them. Awesome. Well,
also, again, we think because of the way the magnetic field of Jupiter is that it and some of the gas giants actually have layers of liquid metallic hydrogen.
Think about when we can mine that.
Huh. Well, the thing is, would it stay as a liquid metal at room temperature?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Can you produce it in its metallic form, whether solid or liquid, and it maintain as a metal at room temperature? That's the grid.
So, wait, metallic hydrogen can be both a solid or a liquid. That's yes. What I'm getting here, this very last line here. In all, solid or liquid, hydrogen's metallic form would prove useful in the future. Interesting. Physics, kids. Physics.
Weird stuff happens.
Danger, science content. All right, so, now, this, this is an interesting abstract here. It's out on PNAS.org, which is the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America. The title of it is Conformal Piezoelectric Energy Harvesting and Storage from Motions of the Heart, Lung, and Diaphragm.
Ah.
Bless you.
So for those of you following along at home, that means we're going to put little electronics on your organs, and just the very act of you being alive and, you know, your heart beating, your lungs expanding, your diaphragm expanding, all of those things, as they expand and contract, it's going to generate power for all the things that we're going to put inside your body. So then you really are a battery. You're generating electricity just by being alive. So maybe you need a pacemaker. Perhaps having the pacemaker be run by your heart, which is, you know, also being controlled by the pacemaker, maybe that's not a good idea. So maybe putting them on your lungs, or maybe lung and diaphragm, and maybe one on the heart too, all of those being able to power that to regulate your heartbeat and things like that. Things of that nature. So this is, it's crazy science content. There is a video here. I'm going to pull it up, and sorry, you guys on the call probably won't hear it, but let's see if those folks at home can. Let's see. Found this out on Hashim Galili, a really great science communicator that I follow on the Facebooks.
Yeah, it was interesting to come across that.
This is primarily for you folks watching in the YouTube. So pretty music. Pictures of organs with interesting little electronics on flexible membrane attached to them that will then power internal batteries.
If you have a problem watching medical videos, do not watch this.
Yeah. So yeah, cool
stuff.
Cool stuff.
It's how we power all the transhumanism and implants and everything else. Is, well, your body's already generating power anyways, might as well tap it.
Yeah. And it makes perfect sense. You know, how else, you know, you don't want to have to then go in and say, yeah, I need the battery changed to this thing in my body.
Yeah, I know.
You know, you don't want to do that. And the idea of doing like inductive charging, like on your arm or something, you know, those things get hot. And then you're cooking your skin through, you know, radiation. I don't think that's a very good idea either.
Delicious.
Yeah. So if you're already in there implanting something, then, you know, perhaps just go ahead and add the thing that will charge it too. Makes sense. So with that, we're on now to Law and Order. Order in the court. So we got another leak. Another fairly sizable leak.
For those people who remember about three or four months ago, the Panama Papers, it happened again, but this time from the Bahamas.
So what we know so far, this came out on Vice, which was the first I heard about it. Let's see here. Continue below. I'm just going to see if there's just a quick rundown, which there isn't. Darn. So we're going to have to dig through a little bit to actually get the nuggets of wisdom. Newly leaked cache of documents has put Amber Rudd, the UK's Home Secretary, under the spotlight, revealing the details of her business career before she entered politics. Among other things, she was the director of two companies in the Bahamas, a tax haven, which she failed to mention when defending David Cameron over the Panama Papers revelations. She was also director of a company where her co-director was jailed for fraud. There's no suggestion that she was involved in any wrongdoing, but obviously this isn't a great look for a minister. Rudd has declined to answer questions, but says her previous business career is public knowledge. Vice has contacted Rudd for further comment. The Bahamas leaks are 1.3 million leaked files originating from the tax haven's corporate records. Just like the Panama Papers, which were made public in April, they came to light after an unknown source handed files concerning offshore companies to Bastian Obermeier and Frederick Obermeier. Interesting. Their last names are spelled differently? Or is that just a typo?
Obermeier and Obermeier.
Yeah. One letter difference, yeah. And it's the letter Y, so it could be an I, but it's not. Anyway, journalists for the German newspaper...
Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Gesundheit. This latest leak is just one-tenth the size of the Panama Papers, but size isn't everything, and the leak sheds some light on yet another secretive offshore center, the Bahamas. Leaked files revealed details concerning the offshore activities of prime ministers, governmental advisors, members of royal families, and convicted criminals. The ownership and management of an offshore corporation is not illegal, and in many cases, legitimate business reasons lie behind the creation of an offshore structure. Experts in transparency issues, however, stress how important it is for public officials to disclose their involvement in offshore entities.
And below that, it actually shows the website where all this new data is located, which is the same place the Panama Papers were leaked to, which is offshoreleaks.icij.org.
Let's go over there real quick. Oh, please read the statement below before searching. There are legitimate uses for offshore companies and trusts. We do not intend to suggest or imply that any person's companies or other entities, including the ICIJ offshore leaks database, have ever broken the law or otherwise acted improperly. Many of the people, entities... Yeah, I've read it and understand. Thank you. Offshore leaks database. Find out who's behind almost 500,000 offshore companies, foundations, and trusts from the Panama Papers, the offshore leaks, and the Bahamas leaks investigations. Search by jurisdiction, search by country. Just enter a name here. Who do you want to search?
Well, if you want to do anything, continuing on with the Vice article, European Commissioner Neelie Kroes, N-E-E-L-I-E, space, K-R-O-E-S.
N-E-E-L-I-E?
Yep.
P-R-O-S-E? Nope.
K-R-O-E-S.
E-S?
Neelie Kroes.
K-R-O-E-S, okay. Let's see. Three officers. Neelie Kroes, there, okay. In the Netherlands?
European commissioner whose involvement in an offshore company during her term as European commissioner has been revealed. Kroes participated in an offshore corporation, Mint Holdings Limited, serving as the company's manager from 2000 to 2009. Kroes failed to disclose this in her declaration of interests upon assuming her position as commissioner for competition in 2004. She failed to mention this once again in 2010 when she became the European Commissioner for Digital Agenda.
Now, I will also state that this also has, like, their address. So, I don't want to dox people. But as they're public officials that we're looking at, that's probably common knowledge anyway, so I'm not really going to feel too bad about it. But, yeah, there could be some sensitive information, and obviously we're already diving into their privacy by looking at things that are leaked. So... use this with whatever moral compass you can dig up, if you so choose. But the information has been made available. I no longer care about this. I'm moving on.
Yeah, there's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's... and for those that are just conspiracy theorists or just voyeurs and perhaps paparazzi and things like that, yeah, this is a treasure trove. You're going to want to see it.
And it goes through all sorts of international politics.
Yeah. If you are keen on following the money.
This is how you do it.
This is how you do it. This is definitely how you do it, and this is how the reporters do it. So you could.
Following Money 101.
You could do it too if you want to. It's the home game. Follow the money, the home game. All right. So moving right along. This is. We've been having a lot of police brutality and perhaps carelessness with human life. Hard to kind of lay that out with not being controversial, I suppose.
There is a problem in how we police and the people who police. Not all of them, but it is happening at such a regular rate in our national dialogue that something has to be done.
Yeah. It's not so good. It's not so good. So, this came out September 21st. Massachusetts Supreme Court says black men may have legitimate reason to flee police.
Yeah.
Citing police data and an ACLU report, the Massachusetts High Court stated that black men have a legitimate reason to flee police officers. The state's highest court threw out a gun conviction of Jimmy Warren in the September 20th, 2016 ruling, citing Boston police data and 2014 report by the ACLU of Massachusetts that found blacks were disproportionately stopped by the city's police, according to the report by WBUR. Warren was convicted of unlawful possession of a firearm after police made an investigatory stop in connection with a breaking and entering that had occurred in a nearby home approximately 30 minutes earlier. According to the slip opinion released by the slip opinion. I'll have to look that up. By the court, the victim reported that he opened the door to his bedroom after his foster mother reported hearing voices in his room. Upon opening the door to the room, he saw a black male wearing a red hoodie, hooded sweatshirt, jump out the window. When the victim looked out the window, he saw two other black males, one wearing a black hoodie and one wearing dark clothing.
So detailed.
So very detailed. A police officer later saw two black males, both wearing dark clothing, walking by some basketball courts near a park. One male wore a dark-colored hoodie, having a hunch that they might have been involved in the breaking and entering. As the Supreme Court wrote, he decided to figure out who they were and where they were coming from and possibly do, quote, a field interrogation observation. Interesting. He rolled down the passenger side window of the cruiser and yelled out, "Hey guys, wait a minute." Both men made eye contact and fled. Warren was subsequently taken into custody, charged with unlawful possession of a firearm, and later convicted. The court made two major rulings in the ruling. First, the police lacked reasonable suspicion for the investigatory stop of the defendant. And second, the fact that he fled the police should not be used against him.
That's the bigger one.
That's kind of a big deal.
AKA, running away is not a admission of guilt.
That's right.
Well, it used to be.
Yeah.
It used to be that if you ran from police, that was reason for them to run after you, to pursue you, and then search you, take you to the station, because it was an implied admission of guilt if you fled police.
Yeah. But nowadays, it's just, I don't want to die.
And so many times you see armed or unarmed African-American men.
A guy just eating chicken in his backyard. In his own backyard.
But people, I mean, we're still getting reports of that one shooting where the guy didn't have a gun, he had a book. So, no, there is legitimate fear, if you are a black male, that any interaction with the police is going to end in your death, regardless of what you do.
WBUR reports that regarding the second point, the court noted that state law gives individuals the right to not speak to police and even walk away if they aren't charged with anything. The court said when an individual does flee, the action doesn't necessarily mean the person is guilty, and when it comes to black men, the Boston Police Department and the ACLU reports documenting a pattern of racial profiling of black males in the city of Boston must be taken into consideration. The court went on to explain, quote, "We do not eliminate flight as a factor in the reasonable suspicion analysis whenever a black male is the subject of an investigatory stop. However, in such circumstances, flight is not necessarily probative of a subject's state of mind or consciousness of guilt. Rather, the finding that black males in Boston are disproportionately and repeatedly targeted for field interrogation and observation encounters suggests a reason for flight totally unrelated to consciousness of guilt. Such an individual, when approached by police, might just as easily be motivated by the desire to avoid the recurring indignity of being racially profiled as by the desire to hide criminal activity. Given this reality for black males in the city of Boston, a judge should, in appropriate cases, consider the report's findings in weighing flight as a factor in the reasonable suspicion calculus." I think that's well thought out.
Well put, well thought out, and this is historic. Let's call it as it is.
Also, to answer your question from earlier,
yes,
a slip opinion is an official stage in the life of a U.S. Supreme Court opinion. When the court announces a decision, it immediately releases a bench opinion. A few days later, the court prints a slip opinion, which might include corrections not found in the bench opinion. This allows for a wide dissemination and review of the opinion. This is from the American Bar Association's website.
Okay, so the slip opinion is the corrected bench opinion.
Yes.
Whatever the ruling was from the bench, this is the refined and final version, the slip opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And we've just learned something.
Actually, my Google Foo is decent.
Yeah, it's
today.
It's excellent. I kept reading while you were doing that, so you know, it's all good. All good. So that's wonderful news. Of course, we'll see what happens if it gets probably appealed again and then taken to the U.S. Supreme Court, not just the state Supreme Court.
I doubt state prosecutors are going to try and move this further up, especially with the reason, status, and finding by the state Supreme Court. That would be hard to press.
Well, yeah, I'm not seeing necessarily this being a much of an issue in, say, Massachusetts as far as it being challenged again, but I can see if an opinion like this is used in other states about, well, the police ran after this guy and shot him, or police ran after this guy and, you know, did the whole, you know, stop and frisk, you know, and the only reason they went after him is because he ran. That's where I'm going to start seeing things get interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, but in this particular case, I don't see it being pushed further along. In future cases, especially if this ruling is cited, then we could see it move up.
And we probably will. That's what I'm banking on, I think. So, keeping with the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, police accidentally recorded themselves fabricating criminal charges.
Yep. In Connecticut.
Connecticut state troopers accidentally left a protester's camera on and recording as they discussed ticketing him. So this was out, you know, in many places, but I pulled this from Snopes, so they've already done the fact-checking on this. So the American Civil Liberties Union is suing Connecticut state police after law enforcement agents accidentally recorded themselves. Connecticut state troopers arrested Michael Picard in September 2015 as he was protesting a DUI checkpoint. Picard has a strong interest in constitutional law and the right to privacy laws, and so felt that it was his duty to find where the checkpoints were located, at least within the Hartford region, and record the officers. According to the complaint filed in U.S. District Court by the ACLU, Picard was already well known to authorities there. Let's see, quoting here, at all times during his protest, Mr. Picard held a 3-foot by 2-foot yellow sign reading, "Cops ahead, keep calm and remain silent." He displayed the sign to motorists on Park Road who were approaching the Gore from both directions. I guess Gore is a geographical icon of some type? Okay. At least one state police officer and one West Hartford police officer drove by Mr. Picard as he protested, and neither stopped to engage him. However, weeks in advance of Mr. Picard's protest, an employee of the Hartford Police Department who is familiar with Mr. Picard's protest activities telephoned the state police and warned them that Mr. Picard would almost certainly protest the September 11th checkpoint. The Hartford police officer told the state police that Mr. Picard was the lawful owner of a pistol, that Mr. Picard is harmless, and that Mr. Picard habitually video records all of his interactions with the police for later dissemination. Three officers approached Picard and confiscated his camera, saying that it was illegal to record them. Connecticut ACLU legal director Dan Barrett, who is representing Picard, called their actions really brazen. He was standing there for an hour and a half, without any problems. Then the state police officers who were working the checkpoint come over to Michael, and the first thing they do is slap the camera out of his hand so it hits the ground. He thinks it's broken. It was really brazen. There's another video showing that the first thing the state trooper does is walk up and, with his open hand, slap the camera down on the ground. He doesn't even say anything like, put that down, or please lower your camera. He just slaps it to the ground. Then he interacts with Michael as if nothing has happened, as if I'm just allowed to do that, and I don't even have to tell you why. I just broke your camera. It's really an amazing level of hostility. Picard then reportedly picked up the camera and continued trying to record, and officers then took it away, not realizing that the camera was still rolling. there is a video. The above video catches the discussion, and then at about a minute two, one officer says, "You want me to punch a number on this either way? Got to cover our ass." The officers then discuss what charges the protester should receive. "I think we do simple trespass, we do reckless use of the highway, and creating a public disturbance." So far, the video isn't particularly eyebrow-raising, but a few moments later, the following exchange takes place at about 1 minute 48 into the video. "We'll throw all charges, three on the ticket, and then we claim that I'm backup. We had multiple people. They didn't want to stay and give us a statement, so we took our own course of action." Okay. The criminal charges brought against Picard were dismissed in July 2016. He is seeking reimbursement for his court costs and an unspecified amount of damages, saying his First and Fourth Amendment rights and the right to free speech and unreasonable search and seizure, respectively, were violated.
Which they were.
Which they all very plainly were. So, and that is Law and Order, or at least some variation thereof.
I think the primary rule for being a cop, honestly, if you want to solve all the problems of cops nowadays, the rule the cops should be living by is just simply, hey, don't be a dick.
But so many of
that'd be nice
guys that are now wearing the badges
are dicks.
Guys who should be wearing the badges.
Well, it came up in conversation and came back up through the zeitgeist. It seems to roll around on a bit of a cycle. The whole police being limited to a 108 IQ.
104.
I was being gracious. Now, we have said it before. We can go back. We have several episodes where we've discussed this. And there are many jurisdictions, many counties, because this is a county-based thing, not even a state-based thing. But many counties don't follow that. So you may have quite intelligent officers. So go ahead with that. You know, stick that in your brain. However, there are many others that when they're looking at recruitment and they do a specific test, the outcome of that is the equivalent of, you know, 104 IQ, and that's what they're looking for. Anybody above that, they think is a risk that they might walk away or become disinterested in the job, or maybe they're going to ask too many questions.
They're worried about turnover. That's the legitimate excuse that they're trying to give.
That's the excuse they're trying to give. Legitimate is debatable.
But it has been ruled in a court of law that they can essentially discriminate this way. Right.
Yeah. That was what came up in our conversation, that it was okayed by a court. So I think we need a higher standard for our officers.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going with.
Hi, Really Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye!
It's time for another good idea, bad idea. Good idea.
We apparently have one good idea.
It's been one of those weeks, let's be honest here.
We have only one. One good idea. And we've talked about some of the things that they're doing overseas in Sweden and Norway and some of the more
progressive
countries, about how they're trying to take take us out of the Dark Ages and really take care of the environment. A lot of forward thinking on things. And Sweden has introduced a tax break for repairing goods instead of tossing them. We've kind of developed a disposable society, you know, in many ways, especially
the Walmart society.
Yeah, the consumerist drive to just, it's easier just to throw it away and buy something new. That TV, that's too complicated. I can't fix that. I'll just buy a new one. You know, there's that threshold that we have. So at a certain point, where are you going to make that change? So they're doing it with financial means. Sweden, a country that's already regularly heralded as the most sustainable in the world, is implementing another policy designed to make sure that nearly nothing ends up in its landfills. A series of new tax breaks in the country's 2017 budget statement, available in PDF here, will make it cheaper to repair old and broken bikes, clothes, shoes, and more, according to The Guardian. The proposals being introduced in Swedish Parliament this week included reducing the VAT, value-added tax, on repairs from 25% to 12%. One of the Swedish ministers plans estimates that it would reduce the cost of a $47 repair by about $6. So that's significant. That does move that needle. The Social Democrat and Green parties headed up the legislation are also proposing a rule that would allow people to write off half the labor cost of their repairing ovens, fridges, dishwashers, laundry machines, and other home appliances on their income tax. The point is to make the cost of repairing anything from a stove on the fritz to a broken shoe much more appealing than buying a new item, preventing those old products from ending up in a landfill. If the budget passes, it'll go into effect in January.
Fantastic.
Now, this is a point where I would suggest going out to iFixit and getting yourself perhaps an iFixit kit that you can then repair your own cell phones and things of that nature. I have a busted screen on my Huawei Nexus 6P that I need to repair. So I've got all the components, I've got the tools, I've got the talent. I'm going to make it happen.
And having fixed a cell phone, I actually fixed Dan's wife's cell phone, her screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's you save a lot of money.
Oh yeah,
just got time and do it right.
Yep.
No, so. But, yeah, immense amount of monetary savings, and this just makes it even better. Also, I can see this being something that even Republicans can, you know, grab hold of and enjoy because it's a tax break.
Yeah, they love writing tax breaks. That's for sure.
And this is a tax break that actually does something positive.
Mm-hmm.
It turns every person in the house back into the old school handyman.
Yeah.
It promotes that. It promotes, you know, learning. It promotes care. And again, it helps cut down on waste.
Mm-hmm.
So last week we had France outlawing, you know, plasticware.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have this. So Europe is moving ahead towards trying to abide by the Paris Accords. We're kind of lagging behind.
Well, we have, we need to come up with a good term. You know, there's the Luddites. You know, the people that are anti-technology. Well, I guess they would be anti-progressive. So I guess that would be the conservatives. Hmm. Okay. That was the good idea.
Actually, brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's a fantastic idea. So at least we have that going for us as we go into this.
Bad idea.
Charlotte Congressman, sorry for Newsnight race comments.
Sorry he spoke honestly.
I'm sorry, I was being truthful.
Yeah.
I spoke my mind. Isn't that what I'm supposed to do now? Not when it's horrible. Really.
Look, old racist white man says something old and racist.
Yeah. So, it was Robert Pittenger. He apologized following the remarks about a black community he made on BBC Newsnight. Quote, The grievance in the mind is the animus, the anger, the Republican said about the protesters in the city of Charlotte in his home state. They hate white people because white people are successful, and they're not. Protests followed the fatal police shooting of Keith Lamont Scott, a black man in Charlotte, on Tuesday. Mr. Pettinger, who represents the city in the U.S. House of Representatives, has backed Donald Trump for president, apologized within hours of the interview on Thursday night via a Twitter response. I apologize to those I offended and hope we can bring peace and calm to Charlotte. My intent was to discuss the lack of economic mobility for African Americans because of failed policies. he had faced severe criticism for his from his constituents as well as fellow members of Congress. My answer to BBC doesn't reflect who I am. I was quoting statements made by angry protesters last night on national TV. Not my intent. What is taking place in my hometown breaks my heart. Today, my anguish led me to respond to a reporter's question in a way that I regret. Of course you regret it.
It was on tape.
Yeah, exactly. I regret that I was caught saying things like that and you didn't like it. So, yeah, it's interesting how mea culpas are released via Twitter more and more now.
Again, this just gives, if you see this up anytime soon, so much ammunition. Because, again, Charlotte is a diverse city.
Oh, yeah.
It's also one of the most progressive in its state. So, if this guy's currently representing you, I think he shouldn't be.
Well, you know, North Carolina has kind of been in the spotlight recently.
It's the new Florida.
It's becoming a really horrible place, based on the laws. It's
based on its elected officials.
Yeah. And boy, are they leaving their mark on it. Look at them go, guys. Look at them go. Right to the back of the bus of history.
Apparently the video of the interview is priceless because the host is just horrified what this man is saying.
I apparently have it blocked because it's flash content. So, yeah. I do that kind of thing around here.
But you can find the link in our show notes.
That is correct. he got a lot of response. A lot of response. So, we'll leave that there. And on to Canada.
Yes, it's not just us here in the United States with our government officials fleecing the people. Canadians do it too.
Well, they might have learned it from us. Trudeau aides sorry for unreasonable moving expense. Senior aides to Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau have apologized for claiming expenses they acknowledged were unreasonable. Principal Secretary Gerard Butts and Chief of Staff Katie Telford will repay costs related to their move from Toronto to Ottawa. Wait a second. Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. They're going to repay that? Well, they didn't learn from the United States then.
Yeah, fair.
No, remember, they're Canadian.
That's right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, darn, you caught me.
Gosh, yep. Oh, sorry about that. they moved to the capital after the Liberal Party victory in 2015. Opposition parties had been targeting Mr. Trudeau's Liberal government for days over the expenses. This comes after revelations that the Liberal government had signed off on... Wow.
And $838,000 in moving expenses for staff, including a good portion of that for the employees of the Prime Minister's office.
That's a bit of cash there. In a lengthy statement published on Facebook. Note where we're getting our news from. Twitter and Facebook. Just that's where it's breaking.
This is the age we're in.
Yeah, so published on Facebook late on Thursday, the aides said they would be repaying almost 65,000 Canadian in relocation expenses. So, apparently their relocation expenses were still quite high, but that was the unreasonable part.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still over $700,000 American that was involved in moving expense. But, you know, Stephen, could you Google Foo something for us? Thank you. What is the average office expense allowance for a member of Congress? Because
for the staff,
I think
or for the actual people,
for no, their offices, which okay. include staff, it's not a small number.
No, so, give me a second. I will dig into this.
Yeah, so it's expensive. Because you're supporting these people, moving all of their stuff, perhaps, you know, who knows how many hotel stays or how many flights and things like that. It does add up. It does add up. Anybody that's done any traveling knows how quickly it adds up.
Office personnel.
Yeah.
In 2012, for example, the office personnel allowance for each member was $944,671.
Each.
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 Each member of Congress, that's how much they are budgeted for their entire staff. A year.
About a mil. About $1 million. So.
That's yearly?
Yeah.
The Each. House sets the funding levels for the MRA annually as part of the federal budget process. According to the CRS report, this amount decreased from a total of $660 million for fiscal year 2010. To $573.9 million for fiscal year 2012.
Your tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen. Your tax dollars at work, citizens of Netlandia. Okay, so, yes, Canada's also doing similar things, but you know what? I don't think those are unreasonable now.
Oh, but... However, this seems to be a, as we go further into the BBC article, this is a touchy issue for Canadians and their politicians. And we don't have just people uttering dumb things here in the States. Back in 2005, former Liberal cabinet minister David Dingwall famously uttered the phrase, "I am entitled to my entitlements." This was during a parliamentary hearing into expenses incurred by him and his staff during his time heading the Royal Canadian Mint.
I am entitled to my entitlements.
Yeah. Those expenses included everything from a luxury car, travel, to a pack of gum. In previous misgivings... former Conservative Cabinet Minister Bev Oda was forced to apologize in the House of Commons for expenses incurred during a stay at the posh Savoy Hotel in London in 2011 when she was in the UK for an immunization conference, including a $16 Canadian glass of orange juice.
But digging in deeper also on our side, because the House is different than the Senate.
Oh, the Senate gets more?
This is the SOPIA, which mm-hmm. is the Senator's official personnel and office expense account. It's made up of three separate allowances: the administrative and clerical assistance allowance, the legislative assistance allowance, and the official office expense allowance, of which they can all be flummoxed back and forth as far as what goes to what. In the fiscal year of 2013, legislative branch appropriations bill, the size of the average Senate SOPIA allowance is $3,209,103, with individual accounts ranging from $2,960,716 to $4,685,632, depending on the population of the senator's states.
How about we cut down there? There's some budgets that can be cut.
Wow.
You want budget cuts, Republicans? Cut those.
Oh, no, that'll directly affect them and their ability to do their job. It can't cut that.
That cuts... That's cutting off their own nose. Why would they ever do that? They're also the ones that vote for their own raises.
Again, that always
unanimously every time.
That they're in charge of their own personal review and they're in charge of their own wages. Like, yeah, no, I'd love to, you know, be in charge of my wages, what benefits package I get.
I think I did a great job. Despite my approval ratings dipping down to single digits during my stay here. Yeah. No big deal. No, I did a fantastic job.
No, I think, no, most definitely. I just got to go to my employer and go, no, there has been a vote and I've passed for my own personal budget. Yes, I would like $1 million for myself and my staff. That's just going to happen.
Now, does that pay the staff themselves, or does that just pay for the facilities for the staff?
I think it goes into all of it. If it's that much money, I would hope that covers you know, their salary, their benefits packages.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
Possibly some transportation costs. I would hope it would be fairly encompassing.
Well, it doesn't include their salaries.
It doesn't include the senator's salaries.
No, it doesn't include their compensation. So
no, that's separate.
Yeah.
The top of the article, which I pulled from, which is from usgovinfo.about.com, and a lot more past that.
Of course.
Along with their salaries, benefits, and allowed outside income, the members of the U.S. Congress are provided with various allowances intended to defray expenses related to carrying out their congressional duties. According to the Congressional Research Service, CRS, report, congressional salaries and allowances are provided to cover all official office expenses, including staff, mail, travel between members, state, district, or Washington, D.C., and other goods and services.
So it would include their staff. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's paid directly for the staff members, but then it's also the other things.
That's a lot of money for staff. That's also considering that you have congressional interns. And I know they don't get a lot of money. So that, I'm sorry, those numbers seem awfully big.
Well, you're not the only one that thinks that. let's see.
And look how little press this gets.
Oh, it doesn't get any, yeah. Because why would they do that?
Each member is allowed to use their MRA to employ up to 18 full-time permanent employees and up to 4 part-time or temporary employees. The annual salary of any employee or member of the House of Representatives is currently limited to $168,411 in 2013. This has since gone up a little. Because there is a standard percentage increase that it goes up by every year.
Right.
Like,
you know, that cost of living increase that other people don't get.
Yeah, well, they would certainly get it. 3-4% typically.
Yeah.
Okay, so up to 18 people plus
4 part-timers.
Plus 4 part-time intern variety people. Up to 160,000?
168,000.
168,000 salary caps for that. Wow.
Now, is that just salary or is that salary plus benefits?
That just said salary. That's just straight pay.
Okay, so if all 18 people on their staff were making that amount of money, that'd be $3 million. So they're not all making that much money, and they don't all have that big of staff. So it all depends, really, on how they're... They do have to budget that out, yeah.
New York, Texas, Florida, California, they probably have a lot bigger staffs than, say, Rhode Island.
Or Vermont.
Montana. A lot of land.
North
population.
North Dakota, eh? Yeah.
Alaska.
Yeah, so
I can see Hawaii having, you know, the travel expenses.
Right. Yeah. They would not have a lot of staff, but boy would they have travel expenses out the butt. And of course, whatever space they put their offices in would be expensive too. Because real estate is very expensive. So yeah, fun stuff that you learn about your government and how much it costs to run the government. I did, however, get the title for the show. It's their title entitles them to their entitlements.
I like it.
I think that works out nicely. And well, that does it. I think we've done it. So now we're on to just our own picks and whatever we bring to the table from our own brain pans. This week, I found out that NASA is going to hold a press conference Monday. So this is one of the reasons why I wanted to put it in here as only having a single show, because otherwise this would release on Monday, on Wednesday, 2 days after. So they're going to be saying that there's some evidence of surprising activity on Europa. So look for that. The teleconference will be at 2 p.m. Monday, September 26th, to present new findings from images captured by the agency's Hubble Space Telescope on Jupiter's icy moon of Europa. So, woohoo! Fun stuff! Science content! We get to see what the heck's going on one of our celestial neighbors.
Yes.
So keep an eye out for that. Daniel, you don't have anything listed here. Nothing this week? Okay. Steven, Epic NPC Man.
Yeah, I've got two. Let's start with the Epic NPC Man.
Okay.
Because all of us, every other who's played RPGs, have always dealt with that guy in town. It's the standard NPCs, and this is literally that guy. It's the standard trader, or whoever it is in town. It's literally an MMO from this poor bastard's perspective. The videos are less than 2 minutes long each, and they are still ongoing.
Okay.
I mean, go ahead and play the first one, because it should be fairly short.
Okay, it's a...
Yeah, big NPC, man!
Episode one.
Hello,
skip.
Adventure. Welcome to the town of, Honeywood. Welcome to Honeywood. Hello, adventurer, and welcome to the town of Honeywood. We, Hello, Advent Skip. There's a drag skip. The castle is skip. Monster skip. The sword of skip. Here's the sword of skip. Thank you, hero. We truly believe that would,
Yeah, big NPC, man.
Wow.
Hey guys, thank you so much for watching Epic NPC Man.
Short.
If you see more awesome stuff, click the subscribe button below.
Short, straight, to the point.
Hang on, I'm letting them have their credit where credit is due.
Be in the next episode, one of the characters. So great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks guys.
See you later.
The f*** is that?
Is that always above my head?
No,
that's really
nice. Nice.
Yeah, they're Australian.
Oh, well, that automatically makes them better, so...
But no, I think there's 11 videos out so far. It's just, like, this poor bastard in the middle of this adventurer's town having to deal with adventurers and as an NPC. And they're short, but they're great. I actually binge-watched all of them last night. I just couldn't stop.
Of course you did. Of course you did. And why wouldn't you? It's good. Okay, so yeah, go take a look at them and subscribe to their channel and bring their numbers up. And what is this next one? The Closer with Keith Olbermann.
I am a fan of Keith Olbermann from way back in the day when he originally had his show on MSNBC. Matter of fact, the woman who the house I'm currently in and the person who made me the raging liberal I am today are definitely very much contributed to it. Introduced me to him, and I just fell in love with him and fell in love with the show. Of course, there's been problems. Let's say he has a very strong personality that some TV producers don't like.
He's a prima donna.
He is a prima donna, but he also is factual he knows how to present things, and he's very good at it. He used to have this thing called the special comment, which is a 5-6 minute just rant he would do. This is essentially what these are. They are amazing. It is him just at his best, going back from, you know, being relegated to sports and everything else, doing the hardcore, hard-hitting politics and political discussions and just observations that I fell in love with this man about. And I'm glad to see him back on the air in some form. You can find him on the GQ website.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely beautiful. Like, the first thing he came out with was 106 reasons Donald Trump shouldn't be president.
176.
176, yeah. I also love the fact he brought the whole thing of Hillary was wrong about the basket of deplorables being only half of the...
I'm going to play that, because that's something that I shared on Facebook. So, you know, at least I'm going to try and play that. Come on, play. Oh, man, really? Really? Okay, apparently I have to disable my pop-up blockers and things like that to get things to play.
It's GQ.
Oh, wow, it's still not going. Oh, there we go.
Not to applaud tricks from the poli-sci-fi movie The Manchurian Candidate too loudly, but anybody notice that days later we aren't debating whether or not Trump supporters are deplorable? We're debating how many of them are. And by the way, Hillary Clinton was dead wrong about this. Half? The Trump gang is trying to pull off the neat trick of making deplorable into a red badge of courage, while simultaneously scoring martyr points by insisting it was an inappropriate attack. It's not going well. Somebody asks Mike iRobot Pence if he would agree merely that David Duke is deplorable, and Pence seems offended by the question and says he's not in the name-calling business, whereupon his buddy, Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah, tells Pence he at least must call Duke's racism deplorable and the Trump campaign must repudiate the alt-right. And then campaign manager Kellyanne Conway tries to pivot away to Hillary's health by claiming Secretary Clinton lied about her pneumonia. Unfortunately, when pressed about whether Trump should release his full medical records, she seems offended and says everybody, even Trump, has a, quote, right to privacy, apparently completely unaware that less than 3 weeks ago, Trump offered to release his detailed medical records to Dr. Oz, because Dr. Who is not filming locally. Then Trump makes a fool of himself by deciding not to release the full thing to Dr. Oz. And then he goes on Dr. Oz anyway and hands Dr. Oz a piece of paper. And Oz reads briefly from it and says, 267 pounds. And for all we know, the paper could have been a taco to go menu. And while that gaffe is still echoing, the deplorables again steal the stage. Video spreads of a protester getting grabbed by the neck and punched by a Trump supporter during his speech in Asheville, whereupon they eject the held, not the holder. And then a 69-year-old woman, after the same speech, tells a Trump supporter that if Trump gets elected, the guy had better learn Russian. And the first words he should learn in Russian should be, ha ha. So he allegedly decks the woman, who is apparently injured when the punch sends her crashing into her own portable oxygen tank. And this kinder, gentler Trump campaign, well, it is kinder, gentler. The Trump supporters aren't all wearing the same colored shirts yet. This comes as the campaign had seemed
to
big events with dangerous crowds in order to tamp down all the noise about deplorable. What was that exactly that Hillary Clinton said about them again? Racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. And your point? But forget the supporters for a moment. What about the advocates? Racist? Well, the co-chair of Trump's campaign in New York, former Republican nominee for governor here, Carl Paladino, on Twitter. Lynch, Loretta Lynch. It was a typo by a staffer, they explained. But 6 years ago, he sent out a video of an African tribal dance. The email was titled, Obama Inauguration Rehearsal. Sexist? Well, Trump himself talking about Megyn Kelly, or Mika Brzezinski, or Heidi Cruz, or Carly Fiorina. Homophobic? Robert Jeffress, the Texas megachurch pastor who led the prayer at a Trump rally in June, a year after he said gay rights, quote, will pave the way for that future world dictator, the Antichrist, to persecute and martyr Christians without any repercussions whatsoever.
That's a good impression.
Islamophobic? The New York co-chair, Paladino.
That's actually what it sounds like.
Kazir Khan.
I mean, if he's a member of the Muslim Brotherhood or supporting the ISIS type of attitude against America, there's no reason for Donald Trump to have to honor this man.
I don't think that's a good
And xenophobic, ubiquitous campaign spokeswoman Katrina Pearson 4 years ago. Perfect Obama's dad, born in Africa. Mitt Romney's dad, born in Mexico. Any purebreds left? If you say purebreds and you're not in a Harry Potter film or at a dog show, you have a screw loose. These are campaign leaders, surrogates, friends of Mr. Trump. If they're not talking to a basket of deplorables, who are they talking to? Why would you have them there? You say stuff like that at work, you get fired. You say it at school, you get suspended. But happily, Trump is there to say, no, it's okay to hate. Better than that, you can hate out loud. We'll just call it freedom of speech and make America great again. Secretary Clinton originally postulated that half of Trump's supporters were not deplorable. And that's where she screwed up. Because if you support Trump, if you think he should be president regardless of how much he and his advocates hate and mock and punch old women with portable oxygen canisters, if you're not condemning this madness and repudiating these deplorable people, and you are not racist, not sexist, not homophobic, not xenophobic, or not Islamophobic, if you're supporting him not for those things, but in spite of them, you are even more deplorable. The correct number, Secretary Clinton, is not 50%. It's 100. That's the closer. I'm Keith Olbermann. Watch this space.
Again, I love that man. I love his the bombasticness he comes with, the fact that he backs up everything he says. It's amazing to watch him, and I love the fact that you have to be – it's not the new school of politics and political punditry where it's all about the very quick, very soundbite and talking at the lowest level. How many people out there truly got – initially his reference about at least they aren't all wearing the same color shirt yet.
Well, I did.
Yeah, but we are also of the more educated group.
The brown shirts and the black shirts, yeah.
The brown shirts, yep.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, ooh, good reference.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of those like, oh, cringeworthy. Oh, oh, another hit. He, oh,
yeah, but that, you, but you have, again, you're right, Steve. Mm-hmm. It's... involves a the jokes. There are some jokes that are more universal, but at the same time, there are ones that, hi, I'm saying this because I trust my audience will get this, and that means he's trusting his audience is intelligent enough to get it.
Well, okay, let's think. Brown shirts. When did you learn about Mussolini and fascist Italy? When did you learn about that? I think it was for me.
For me, it was high school.
High school.
It was ninth grade. Ninth grade world history class for me.
No,
I believe that's when it was. That's when it was brought up.
But yeah, I know there was also the brown shirts tying people together with the uniforms from the Nazis.
Well, they. Yeah, I mean, it's fascism.
Yeah.
So you got the brown shirts, and then the black shirts. It was the black shirts, right?
For Mussolini?
No. Mussolini was the brown.
No,
it was also brown for the Nazis because with the brown shirts you had the Night of the Long Knives, that was Hitler cleaning house of his supporters, which he just didn't want to keep.
The black shirts were Mussolini. The brown shirts were Hitler.
I think
Italian fashion. Black. It's much more slimming. Brown shirts. Beer.
The brown shirts.
Black shirts. Yeah.
Sturmabteilung. The storm detachment.
Yeah. Yeah.
The original paramilitary wing of the Nazi Party, contemporarily known as brown shirts.
Okay. Brown shirts. Nazis.
Yeah.
Black shirts. Italian fashions.
Yeah.
Fascists. Okay.
Black is so slimming.
Yes.
Brown, think beer.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, they were basically two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
You know, between Mussolini and Hitler, yeah, there was a lot of horrible things going on.
Well, again, a uniform speaks to a unified force.
Yeah.
It is a means of making that force feel more like they belong together, and it is also a form of an intimidation for anyone who is outside that group.
Clothes make the man. The costume, it puts you into character.
Yes.
Williams, anyone out there just generally who wearing clothes, if you go from wearing your standard, say, cut-off jeans and a t-shirt, you feel one way, but the moment you put on an actual, you know, designed for you suit and tie, you just look in the mirror and suddenly you're a different person. You even feel it in your bones. Just, oh, okay.
And again, it goes back to the earlier thing with the protests and the mirrors. Mm-hmm. Cops do not want to look at themselves in full tactical armor and go, this is what you've become.
Yeah.
You're an occupying force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love the mirror technique, though. I think that's
the most perfect. Appropriate thing that has come out in this day and age when it comes to a form of peaceful protest, especially what they're protesting against. Because you can literally show them why we're protesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's that little, it's like shoving their nose in it kind of thing.
It's also showing why people are afraid. It's like, look, wouldn't you be afraid staring at this?
You can't even look yourself in the face.
Yeah.
You can't.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up, gentlemen. So that is it for tonight. We'll be back live next week, Friday, about 9:30 p.m. Eastern. And you can join all the fun in the chat room directly from our webpage and, of course, watch live. So head over to orellyradio.com. That's O-R-L-Y-R-A-D-I-O.com for all the links, for all that we do right at the top of the page. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, subscribe to the YouTube and the Twitch channels so that you will never miss us. If you are hearing this right now, then you must like us. If you do, then others may as well, and you can do us a favor and share the show and review us on iTunes. Now, if you really love us, you can contribute to the Patreon and get early access to the midweek show releases when we have them, and you'll even get some special perks now and then as soon as I think up some. Just follow the Patreon link on the webpage or go over to patreon.com/orellyradio, and you can make a one-time donation via the donate button on the webpage as well. We're always looking for new ideas for the show, so how about you share what's on your mind and shoot us a note to orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com, or if you're the more talkative sort of person, and of course you are, how about you leave us a voicemail at 470-222-6222.